Hello, you're listening to Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast, presented by Brandon Elliott. This show will be going over all aspects of real estate investing and is intended to educate, motivate, and prepare you to take action on your first or next real estate investment. For more information, please visit BrandonElliottInvestments.com. Thank you for listening and enjoy.
Welcome back, everyone, to Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast. I am your host, Mr. Brandon Elliott. I'm excited today. We are going to jump into some detailed KPIs. KPIs, baby, come on. We're talking about wholesaling. We're talking about investing in real estate. And Omar has been a boss in the game the last couple of years, growing, scaling, really perfecting the KPIs. I was, you know, chatting with him before we started going live here and recording, but I've heard his name come up in multiple groups that, like, you would want to be in those groups first off, but also getting praised up because this guy has really dialed in the KPIs. So it is a no-brainer to have him on to be able to share his story and really get the information out there for you as the listeners to be able to selfishly soak it up, take action on writing down the notes, and be able to network with him afterwards to be able to really grow and scale your business. So Omar Lopez, what is happening, my friend? How are we doing today?
Hey, what's happening, bro? You know, first of all, thank you for the introduction. You know, thank you for having me on. I'm honored to be here. You know, first of all, I want to start off with that, just thanking you.
Yeah, of course, dude. I mean, you rightfully earned it by all means. You've been working your ass off to grow and scale. Talk to me. It wasn't so easy as it's getting to be more simplified now with the business and system that you have in place at this point. You know, everything that you've built up over the years. When did you start? How did you start? What's that, you know, that 30,000 foot view for all the listeners that don't potentially know you or your story?
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and give our listeners a ton of value. Let's go ahead and give them some action steps so that they can walk out of here with some golden nuggets and they can implement, you know, in their lives. So my name is Omar Lopez. I'm 29 years old. I live in Miami, Florida, and I'm originally from Palm Springs, California. I've been living in Miami for a year and a half, and it's been a challenge. It's been a challenge to get me where I'm at today. I've been doing this for 6 years. For those of you that don't know, I used to be in the landscaping industry. I used to be a gardener, and everything changed for me when I fell off of a palm tree. I don't even know if you know about this, Brandon.
No, I didn't know about that. I forgot that you lived out here, though, in Cali, too. So that's cool as a fresh reminder. I love it. So you fell off of a palm tree.
I fell off of a palm tree, bro.
Did you get messed up? How high was it?
I got kind of messed up. I'm not the same.
Oh, man. So how high was it?
It was like 15 feet. It wasn't super high. I was halfway through the palm tree. There used to be a tree climbing method where you climb up one palm tree. And you've probably seen this out there in San Diego where there's like a bunch of palm trees. They climb up to the middle one, the highest one. They trim that one. They hang with a harness, a huge like lasso. Yep. And then you swing from one palm tree to the other one so you don't have to climb up and down every single one. So it's a practice that I was very used to. And I used to swing from these palm trees like nothing. That's how I grew up. I went to school, I graduated, went to college and everything, but my dad had me working since I was 6 years old. So, because my dad's a Mexican immigrant and he's been working since he was 6 years old. So, you know, as soon as I was capable, he brought me to go do the gardening route with him. And every Saturday I used to go work with him. So hard work was instilled upon me ever since I was a child.
Oh, yeah.
I had my own little gardening route, and then I started trimming trees because it's what paid more because it's riskier, right? You got to climb up these trees, you know, being an arborist, you know, you get paid a little bit more. So that was the start of my entrepreneurial endeavor because, I mean, I was already a little bit of an entrepreneur before that, but what happened was I quit my job. I was at a job for a year and a half, and it was palm tree season, and during palm tree season in June, you make a little bit more because it's in high demand. You know, everybody's trying to trim their palm trees in Palm Springs.
Yep.
So I quit my job. I bought my own tree trimming equipment, bought my climbing spikes, my new chainsaw and everything. I remember being a little nervous. I said, oh, man, what's going to happen when palm tree season is over? And I said, you know what? If I have to, I'll go get another job or whatever it is, right? So I went out on a limb, literally,
and busted your ass.
I bought my own gear And three days later, bro, I fucking fell down. Oh, excuse my friend.
No, you're good. Yeah. You're good. Be yourself. Man, that is tough.
Yeah.
So you went all in. You quit your job. You ended up going all in, bought your own gear, trying to be an entrepreneur. And 3 days in, you fell and busted your ass. Dang.
3 days later, bro, I busted my ass and I fell on a brick wall. So, on my ass.
So were you hospitalized? Like, what happened?
I was hospitalized. I tried to shake it off. I tried to get up because I had already fallen down of trees a couple of times before. You know, when you're out there, you're naturally going to fall down sometimes. And so I used to always shake it off, right? I tried getting up, tried to shaking it off. Hell no, I collapsed. And I was like, I call 911. So they called 911. They took me out on a stretcher and they took me to the hospital. It was right down the street. And they did a bunch of x-rays. Turns out I had a fractured vertebrae, so they had to do surgery the next day. They put 3 pins and 2 rods in my spine so that my fractured vertebrae wouldn't move anymore, because apparently if it moved a little bit more and if it touched my spinal cord, I would have been paralyzed.
Oh, my God. Dang, man. I didn't know about that. That's wild.
Yeah.
So there goes that for the entrepreneur spirit. So... So what did life look like afterwards? How long, like, what did you do next?
Right. So after that, I was in a back brace. I was a little bummed out because I remember I was just starting to like work out a little bit. You know, I remember before that I was hanging around with the buddies that just had no goals, no vision. And I remember trying to change and become a better person. And it really helped. I think that was probably God's way of telling me, you have to pay for all your lessons, or if you really want it, this is it. Whatever it was.
So or the devil trying to hold you back from your true potential. That's what it was.
Bro. So I remember going to HVAC school. I knew some guy that was doing HVAC services. So yeah. I went back to college. I got my certificate. I got it really quick. And then I started hanging around with a crowd that was no good again, a little bit, right? And then I had a turning point where I said, you know what? I don't want to do any of this shit. I was tired already, you know? So I said, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to be rich. I remember the mindset that I had at the time. And I went on YouTube, started watching a bunch of YouTube videos. I went to the public library, you know? And at that point, I didn't have the back brace no more. But I started getting all these books. I started reading, you know? And I stumbled upon a couple of Robert Kiyosaki's books. And I was introduced to real estate. And I seen more real estate on YouTube. And for me, honestly, it was Rich Dad Poor Dad that kind of changed my mindset. You know, it was a paradigm shift more than anything. So he was talking about living the life that you want, you know, creating your dreams. And I was like, you know what? That's what I want to do. I want to create the life of my dreams. I don't want to work for anybody else. And you know what? I think it's going to be real estate. I can buy houses, collect income, and I don't have to reinvent the wheel. I don't have to reinvent a gadget or anything like that. At the time, it was also crypto. Go ahead.
Did you have any friends, family that was doing real estate, or like anybody that motivate you in your circle for real estate?
Nobody, bro. Nobody was around me.
How did you get that planted seed? You just like, hey, common sense. It's like, hey, I'm paying all my money to the landlord. They're getting good, you know. Like, what was that mindset? How did that seed kind of drop?
Yeah, no, it was just I kept seeing real estate everywhere, like on YouTube. Yeah. Ads and Robert Kiyosaki and all that. And I knew that I was like smart enough to, I'm connecting the dots at this point, right? You know what? I got to pick one thing, right? There was e-commerce, crypto. I lost some money in crypto, drop shipping and all that. And then I kept seeing real estate and I was like, you know, I had heard about real estate or like realtors for sale signs and all that, Coldwell Banker, but never really paid much attention to it. You know, I come from a regular background.
Sure.
And I said, you know what? I think I could do this real estate thing. You know, I don't got to reinvent the wheel. No external influence, no family, no friends. I said, this is what I'm going to do. So right then and there, I started buying a couple of courses on real estate, just diving into it, going to meetups, going to seminars, going to more meetings, reading more books. And it just all started snowballing from there.
I love it. So what year was that?
That was 2000. I fell down from the palm tree in 2017. And I got into real estate in 2018.
Love it. Okay. And then what was the strategy for real estate that caught your eye?
At that time, it was wholesaling. Everybody was talking about wholesaling, right? Oh, you know, no money. Or I had a little bit of money, but it was like what seemed easier to approach at the time. So
okay.
It was wholesaling, and I tried doing a little bit of wholesaling, and then I actually ended up landing on mobile homes for a while. For a while, I was the mobile home guy in my town, and I flipped a bunch of mobile homes.
Really? Okay, yeah. Cool. And so, I mean, you're still doing wholesaling today. Did you switch up any strategies throughout that period of time?
Yeah, so what happened was that I started driving for dollars. I started cold calling a little bit. Almost landed in my first couple of deals, but didn't get lucky.
Yeah.
And then I started doing mobile home flipping, and I started flipping all these mobile homes. I started doing a bunch of notes, carrying back the financing with the notes. And I collected a bunch of those. But then after a while, I said, you know what? I kind of realized that mobile homes wasn't actually real estate investing, right? Because they're private property. Mm-hmm. But I had a bunch of those, flipped them. And then I said, you know what? I want to be a real estate investor. I want to do things that have the land, right?
Yeah.
So then from there, I bought a couple of houses. And then we did a refi on my dad's house. We bought a couple of houses with that money. And then I started buying my own properties in Palm Springs. I did pretty well in this one mobile home park where you own the land. And I bought a bunch of properties in there, started doing deals in there. And then I stopped doing the mobile home deals. You know, I started asking myself, what do I want to do? Do I want to keep flipping mobile homes or get into real estate? So I started progressing from there. And then I started holding on to a bunch of properties. I had maybe like 12 properties at one point.
Mm.
So I had a portfolio, you know, that had over a seven-figure in net worth. But then I was becoming cash poor, right? I had equity, but not so much cash. So then
it's all tied up.
So from there, I said, you know what? All right, I got to take a different approach now. I'm going to focus on building my business for generating cash flow with wholesaling and flipping so that I can just create a machine, right? A machine that's just automatically with systems and processes, you know, just generating cash so that from there, I can buy more rental properties.
I love that.
Yeah.
So talk to me. Let's jump into marketing and KPIs because I think you're like one of the best at it. And really dialing in. And let's be really blunt here. When it comes down to all businesses, it's all data-driven decisions that should be being made. Unfortunately, a lot of people out there, they make a lot more decisions on their business with their gut or, you know, their feelings or just, you know, throwing shit at the wall, you know, and seeing whatever sticks. And what, you know, what we at Credit Counseling Lead and even in our real estate business, as well as you have come across, is really the book Traction, the EOS, you know, methods, and really being able to focus on KPIs. So I want to kind of dive into first marketing on how you guys are bringing in leads. You have a team of about 8 people currently. I want to break down that and then how you guys are kind of addressing high level type of KPIs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So in terms of marketing, we're 100% PPC. So
really?
Yeah. Only PPC.
Okay, cool. Why is that?
It's the hottest lead in the industry.
Okay.
Or now, one of the hottest leads in the industry.
Now in your area, or is that, do you think nationwide anybody could be crushing it with PPC right now? Because I know certain areas, certain marketing strategies can be more beneficial.
Honestly, because I know that you could do like radio or TVs and all that, and that's inbound marketing.
Sure.
When it comes to PPC, it's something that anybody listening to this podcast can go out there and implement, figure out themselves, and they're going to start generating leads that are hot and ready to go. You know,
okay.
So we don't do any more outbound marketing. We used to do cold calling, but we don't do that anymore. Everything that we do is all PPC driven. People call us, you know, we get maybe 8 leads per day, just calling us, you know, ready to get the property sold. Some of them call in. So we started doing that about a year ago, actually. And that's when we really started seeing different results, because we were doing cold calling at the time and we transitioned to PPC. And once we made that change, man, everything started changing after that. So, yeah.
Fuck me. So when it comes down to PPC, what does that look like specifically? You guys are, you know, really focusing on SEO and paying kind of like Google Ads to be able to boost out things? Or what does that look like?
Yeah, so it's on Google Ads. We don't do SEO. And you just got to pay to be the top sponsor on Google, right? People search up, sell my house, you know, cash buyers near me or whatever it is. Depending on the area, that's where, and depending on who else is bidding at the time, you know, it depends on how far up we're going to show up. We run ads in 7 different states right now. Oh. And slowly, by the end of this year, we're only going to be in Florida. That's going to be our 1-year plan. So when you're spread out a little bit further, your cost per lead is lower because you're making Google not work as hard. If I was only going to be doing PPC in South Florida, man, my cost per lead would probably come in at around $400 per lead. Right now, our lead is at about $75 to $80 per lead spread out across 7 different states.
Love it.
Yeah.
Awesome. And then, so you're bringing in about 8 leads per day. You have a team of how many callers or like people that are answering the phone?
We have 2 closers. We just hired a third one. It's his second week. We've been training him. So the goal with him is so that he could be putting properties under contract by the end of next week, like within 2 weeks. So 2 guys locking them up. I have 1 disposition manager. His name is Stefan.
Yeah.
And he's also in charge of the transaction coordination department. I have a transaction coordinator assistant that works directly under him. She's a VA, and she's the one handling all the paperwork, dealing with the title company. And Stefan is also dealing with the title company. So the 2 closers, put them under contract, send them to Stefan and Eunice. They get them closed. I'm the one that's managing them, you know, helping them underwrite the properties in the acquisition room, making sure that it looks pretty good. You know, if Stefan has any questions, I help him out. And then we have Hilda, who is in charge of our administrative stuff, HR stuff. And as you know, she's building up our lines of credit with you guys.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. Stefan, I got the privilege to meet with him. He's a boss as well. When we were out here in San Diego, you brought him to one of the mastermind events, which was cool.
Yeah. He saw it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Okay. So, and then what are you guys averaging per like locked in deal?
So per deal right now, we're at about $17,000 per deal. And we consistently do maybe 6 deals a month on average.
Yeah. Let's go. Yeah. And so these are across 7 different states. Your goal is to kind of go all in your backyard and ramp up marketing for that. Where are you trying to be at on a monthly basis?
In terms of revenue?
Yeah.
So by the end of this year, our goal is to hit $1.8 million in revenue.
Yep.
And that should be at around $165,000, I think, or $185,000 on average per month.
Okay. I love it. And you just started doing that, what, you got 185 this month, so you're well on track, getting ready to crush it. I love it.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, and then talk to me, what other KPIs are you guys tracking besides like a million things? what are the strong like several KPIs that are really important for, you know, whatever role you want to cover?
Yeah. So, you know, I've been learning a lot with KPIs, man. And it's kind of funny that I know a lot about KPIs right now, because when I first got started in the industry, and maybe even within, gosh, like 3 years in, I felt that I had no KPIs tracked. Like everything was just kind of by the hip, right? By the gut.
Yeah.
I consistently started tracking KPIs maybe a year ago, a year and a half ago, maybe. Just sure. More consistently. I remember I used to track data, but it wouldn't really paint a picture. It wouldn't really tell me what to do. And it wasn't until I went to Kent's one-on-one, you know, in San Diego.
Yep.
And he gave me a spreadsheet. And he said, I need you to go in there and grab me 3 months worth of data for like everything that's in your pipeline right now. And from there, that spreadsheet, it consisted how many leads were coming in, how many of them were being contacted, so you have a contact percentage, how many of them are opportunities, how many of them you submitted an offer on, how many were contracted, and then how many were closed. And in between, you have, like, on the acquisition side, you have your lead to offer accepted count, you know, how many leads to 1 contract accepted. And then towards the end, on the disposition side, how many leads to 1 deal. So then from there, you get your closing percentage. And then at the end, because with the leads coming in, you have how much you're spending in marketing as well. So you get your cost per lead as well from the amount of leads that you get in. And then it has a formula all the way to the end where you get your cost per deal and then how much you made per deal. So then you end up getting your your return on ad spend, you know? So from there, that's probably a mouthful right there, right?
yeah, that is, it's some nerdy stuff, but it's amazing when you actually like write it all out. You're like, dang, like this is what a true funnel looks like. And, right. and that's what's important to realize. Like when you actually have a funnel, then you're trying to capture all the water that goes into it, right? Like you're putting, you're throwing a bunch of money up there for, you know, payroll for the people, for the time, the energy, the efforts, and the blood, sweat, and tears, right? The marketing. And you want to capture as much of it as possible and be
absolutely
you know, as efficient as possible, right? So
right.
any little thresholds that are leaking or having issues, like it's going to be a mess.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So from there, I'll kind of get into a little bit of what we're tracking right now.
Yeah.
I'm giving you a little bit of a backstory. Kent had told me, you know what? I need 3 months worth of data. And so what I did is I gave him the entire year. I went back and it literally took me weeks. I was even working Sundays going into my CRM. And it also made me look at the way that I was treating my leads differently. I remember all my leads were going into one bucket. And yeah. so from there, once I started kind of putting everything into the different stages, I started to see, all right, you know, this bucket has to be the contacted bucket, the opportunity bucket, the offer bucket, you know, and so we got to treat these leads with different priorities.
Sure.
And I went back to Ken and I said, boom, here, you know, here's the entire year. So he's seen that. He's like, all right, I need you to consistently keep tracking that. So from there, it just restructured, you know, the way that I thought about my leads and the way that I just track anything now, right? So now the most important metrics that we track, one of them is the lead to offer accepted ratio for acquisition, right? We want to make sure that we're locking up every 15 to 20 leads is one contract, right?
Sure.
And from there, you know, we're trying to make sure that we have a closing percentage of around 50%. So if we're locking up every 20 leads, that means that we need 40 leads to have one deal, right? And then from there, one of the last things that we're tracking is our return on ad spend. Right now, we're getting like a 5.6 ROI on our marketing.
Cool.
So those are some of the main important ones that we're tracking. We just signed up with Tiffany and Josh's group.
Yep.
So we're part of their mastermind. We're part of the small group. And they're actually introducing a new metric which we started implementing into our company. And it's a little bit different.
What kind of metric?
We're the most important things that they're tracking is like how many offers to one contract, right? So you want to see if there is a certain amount of offers. If you're like at a 5 or 6 offers to one contract, that means that you might have a conversion issue. That's probably too many offers to one contract. So right now we're hovering at around a 3.4. So we're measuring our closers all-time performance individually. I have one guy that at an all-time performance, he delivers 2.5 offers to one contract. And lately he's been hovering at around a 3.8. So from there, I could see that he might have been a conversion issue. So from there, on my weekly one-on-ones, I'll go in there and I'll listen to his call recordings and I'll see what's going on in his offer calls to see, all right, you could have said this, you maybe you shouldn't have said that. And another metric that we're implementing with them is how many, what they call process calls to one offer, because basically it's like a 2-call process. You process the lead, kind of learn about them, and then you call back to make an offer. So they track the ratio of how many process to offer. So from there, that could be another red flag where if there's too many process calls, then that means that there could have been more offers in there. So you got to go back and listen to their process calls to see, all right, which lead that you process could have deserved an offer and why didn't you make that offer? And so those are some red flags. I'm starting to implement more one-on-ones with my guys. That's something that I learned with Tiffany and Josh where I listened to their call recordings.
Yeah.
And every Monday, 1 hour, 45 minutes, sit down with me. Let's go over your metrics. Ultimately, what we care about is another metric is just having the projected revenue, right? Every single week. If the projected revenue is not there, then you go and you see the process to offers to contracts, and then you get to see where the red flag indicators are.
I love that. How much are you guys spending on marketing currently?
We spend about $20,000 a month.
$20,000 a month? Is there any reason? Are you still kind of ramping it up slow and steady, or what does that look like?
Yeah, slow and steady. We found right now 20,000 is optimal because that's 240 leads per month. And we can't give our guys right now, the two closers, we can't give them like any more than 120 leads per month because they naturally just can't handle it. Because if you give them too many leads, they'll start falling through the cracks. And then their lead to offer accepted ratio will go up, which lets us know they're probably overwhelmed and they can't treat every lead with respect.
Gotcha. So, and that's another reason why it's all data-driven decisions. So, like,
exactly.
You don't want to be pissing money away, and you also want to realize when is the right time to start hiring on somebody and also ramping up at that right time frame when that person can start taking some leads so that you can transition properly to not have the guy standing around, but also, like, making money for the team, right?
Absolutely.
I love it. Talk to me, what kind of learning curves have you come across while deep diving into these KPIs? It's, you know, there's a bunch of things to say behind learning curves, but I think once we hear about them and acknowledge them and see, like, you know, there's so many learned lessons just learning from what you've already gone through, right? Like, I know not to climb up a tree. I just know that.
That's some good data right there.
That's some good data. But what can you share with any of the listeners as far as KPIs and learning curves?
Yeah, I think another KPI that is very important to track is, you know, your profit and loss, right? Your profit and loss is another KPI that once you start doing more deals and money starts coming in, one learning curve that I had was, you know, not having that stuff tracked, right? Like, or not tracking it properly. So right now, you know, in our QuickBooks, we track every single expense. And it goes to a specific property. Any deal that we're working, you know, if we paid a cleaner to go clean up the house or whatever it is, if we paid a realtor, you know, whatever that expense is, we'll tag it specifically to that property so that at the end, and even if they're wholesale, we'll see, or because we also do novations, right? So sometimes on these novations, even on a wholesale, sometimes we're willing to go, you know, put a lockbox, clean it up, facilitate the sale, get a storage for the seller, whatever it is. So at the end, we'll see, all right, we grossed $32,000 on this deal, but then we see, all right, how much did we end up spending on that deal? You know, we spent $4,000 to clean it up. So we really only netted $28,000, right? So sure. From there, we've made the mistake in the past of just focusing on the revenue that comes in, but not focusing so much on how much money is leaving, right? And so it's easy to just swipe the card, right? We come across a problem and we say, oh, you know what? Just pay for it. One of my good mentors, Peter Fortunato, he said, don't pay your way through problems. Think your way through problems. So I tell that to my team. I tell that to Stefan. You know, hey, the seller's kind of complaining that, you know, they expected this to get done. And in the past, it's like, oh, you know what? Just give them a concession, right? Or, yeah, you know what? Like, let's just pay for it. And it's like, no, you know what? Let's think, like, what's the solution around that, right? You know, that's $2,000 right now, $1,000 right now, but it all adds up, right? So at the end of the day, we can get carried away with spending an extra $10,000, and that just eats up into our profit. So that was a big learning curve for me, not having all my QuickBooks tracked. And I'm pretty proud of them now. I'm going to hire a fractional CFO to make sure that they help us implement even further other graphs, other charts that can connect to my profit and loss, to my balance sheet, so that I can paint a better picture and have somebody backing me up with that, you know, giving me weekly reports so that I can focus on growing the rest of the team and I have somebody backing me up on the financial side.
I love it. What is the, you know, you just talked about your next hire. What does the plan look like for the future for you guys? And how many other hires do you want to take on in the next 12 months?
So right now on our radar, we're going to hire a VA that's going to be like a disposition assistant.
Yeah.
We're going to hire another VA that's going to help us with like data and KPI tracking and all that stuff. They're going to back up a current VA that I have. I have one VA. He's a rock star. And he's the one that puts all my reports for the KPIs. He also has them hooked up to like a dashboard called Plecto. And it's connected directly to my CRM. So we play the TV in our acquisition room and we could see like how many leads came in, how many offers, projected revenue, who's first place, second place. So he needs some help. Another junior acquisition to help out the closers that we have right now. And then I think the last hire would be another disposition manager that can replace Stefan so that Stefan can manage all of them. And then I can kind of take a step back and report directly to Stefan so that I can give him all the tools and all the resources that we need to just continue to scale.
I love it, man. That's so exciting. That's awesome, dude. I know you've been through a lot, and it's not easy building any business. So it's incredible to see where you guys are at right now, what your goals are ahead, and you're like very confident and bold on like, you know, we're getting there. And I know it. And it's because you have, you know, KPIs dialed in properly. You have the right SOPs and everything. What, you know, EOS, basically, let's talk about it for a second. It's definitely helped change the trajectory of like our business and our lives in so many ways. Talk to me about it for you guys.
Yeah. So with EOS, I read it a couple of times, like last year. I remember everybody talking about it even before that. Traction, traction, traction. So I read it last year. I think I read it like two times. But then after I read it the second time, I realized, you know what? I'm not going to get anything out of just reading it another time. I actually have to implement, right? Mm-hmm. So it's one of those books that you really just have to implement. So from there, I started reading it with Stefan, and the hustler side of me, when we were pretty much done with the book, we were devoting 1 hour a day to reading it and implementing it in the company. I remember there was a moment where we probably didn't have, you know, enough deals on the board. And I told Stefan, I said, you know what, Stefan? Man, you know, we got to get back on the phone. We got to get some more deals. Let's put traction to the side. You know, it can wait. You know, I'm not saying like forget about it forever, but, you know, we'll just come back to it. And he didn't like that because Stefan is that type of guy. He's you know, I'm the visionary, right? I'm just like, you know what? Let's just go, bro. Let's just get it done. You know, whatever it is. And he's like, hey, hold on, you know, take a step back. Let's see what we have to do right here. You know, have you thought about it like this? And it's like, oh, damn, you know? So from there, he didn't like it. And he's like, are you sure? And he tried to talk me out of it. And I said, he's like, you know what? It sounds like you already have your mind made up. And I was like, yeah, I kind of have my mind made up. And he's like, all right, whatever. So we went to Austin boardroom, and everybody was talking about traction at that time in Austin. And everybody was saying, oh, EOS this, EOS that. It changed my business. And I took Stefan with me to Austin. And I looked
at it. It's my business. Yeah. I was probably bragging about it there too. Yeah.
Oh, you were? There you go. You were another one. So I looked at Stefan and I was like, all right, Stefan. All right. You won. You know, like we're going to implement it.
Well, at that event too, there was a speaker about EOS, wasn't there? So
yeah,
it's like, it was like, boom, confirmation so many times.
It was right there. I was like, all right, bro, you won. Like, we're going to implement it. So we came back.
Cool.
And gosh, so we started actually implementing it little by little.
Yeah.
We already had some KPIs like that we were tracking. But we developed our scorecard, right? We developed our core values. You know, we took everybody through the GWC.
Did you guys hire on an EOS implementer?
We were going to, and we interviewed two implementers, and we also interviewed with Harper, Sharper Solutions, because we had heard good things about them, and supposedly they were better than Traction, so we wanted to see what they were all about. But ultimately, what we decided to do, we signed up with Tiffany and Josh, because that was a pretty big commitment as well, you know, a monetary commitment, so we couldn't spread ourselves thin everywhere, and we just felt that Tiffany and Josh, like their group, was really what we wanted at that time. So we went with them, and we've continued to self-implement ourselves. And I think the biggest one that has been very effective is, you know, the weekly meetings, right? Yeah. The weekly meetings, we have them every Wednesday. In the beginning, it was a little challenging because, you know, everybody was addressing the issues openly that we had. And as the leader, you know, I'm the one who takes responsibility at the end of the day for anything that happens in the organization, right? So, you know, just everybody having to address these issues. And it was a big growth phase, right? It was pretty uncomfortable just having to iron all this stuff out. And then from there, you know, just started gaining traction, if you will. And now, you know, it's like, all right, let's have these meetings. Let's talk about it. You know, I think we just had one of our highest ratings. We've only had an 8.3 so far, but it was one of our highest ones in this entire time that we've been doing it, right? So we also had our 1 year meeting in December. You know, we all just sat down one day. Nobody was like working in the business. Everybody was on it, just planning, right? We also developed our 10-year vision, our 3-year plan, you know, our 1 year picture. And then from there, we just rolled it out to everybody. So that was a lot of fun. We're going to have our quarterly meeting in a month from now, I guess. And Yeah, it's just been self-implementation. It's been a game changer because now we have more structure. It's more legitimate, right? It's not like, all right, you know what? Let's just kind of get it done, you know? Yeah. We'll just say that for later on. What's the issue? Let's address it.
Yeah, that's good, man. We just had our quarterly meeting this past Monday and had the whole team fly in. And man, it's such a good like bonding experience for the culture, but also it is something to get everybody on the same page, clarity, and you know, great communication to expose everything, not be shy about it, leave it all on the table, and also like really solve some heavy, big problems. And it's incredible to see when everybody is accountable for something, because that was a big issue in our company for a while. Like, who's responsible for what, you know? And everybody was doing multiple things, and it was just like, it was just a mess, you know? So those meetings, I can definitely agree, but just the structure and everything else afterwards, it's game changing. So I definitely love it. Man, there's so much amazing things that you guys got going on. And yeah, I'm just excited for you guys. And the future is definitely bright for sure. Where do you see the company going in the next few years? I know this year you're looking to take territory on like 1.8 million or so.
Yeah, 3 years from now, our goal is 4.5 million.
Cool.
4.5 million. You know, we plan on doing that with probably four closers, two disposition managers, you know, a marketing guy. Have Stefan help me, you know, kind of run the organization. Me being the visionary, he could be the integrator. So 4.5 million just in Florida. Probably dial it down to a couple major markets in Florida. Who knows, maybe just even South Florida. I'm very bullish on South Florida as a whole. You know, it's a beautiful area. So there's a lot of potential for growth right here in terms of real estate. So 1 year from now, just Florida, you know, and I think we'll kind of see which major markets in Florida from there.
I love it. Awesome. Yeah. Well, how can the listeners get a hold of you?
They can follow me on Instagram. It's right here. Like it. At the Omar Lopez.
Let's go.
At the _ Omar Lopez.
Let's go. I love it. That's good. Cool, man. Well, I appreciate your time greatly. Is there anything, like, you almost gave an hour of your time. Is there anything that myself or the listeners can do to give back to you?
Nah, listen, what the listeners can do is just go out there, take action, not make any excuses. You know, send me a DM. If they got any value or if they have any questions, send me a DM. Let me know, you know, if they got one golden nugget from this episode that really helped them to go out there and take some action. And for you, Brandon, nothing from you, bro. Honestly, you're just an incredible human being. I truly do admire everything that you are doing, that Jennifer's doing. I love your energy. So if there's anything that I can ask from you, it's just keep that up, bro.
I love it, bro. You are amazing. Appreciate you, bro. Guys, I highly encourage you to reach out to Omar. The whole team, they're rock stars. They got amazing things going on. You're not going to want to miss it. And they got the heart in the right place to be able to help, you know, correct things and put you in the right place just to help out wherever your business is right now. So by all means, reach out to Omar, show him some love. And if you guys want to get a hold of me, you can always do so. You can reach out on Instagram. It's Credit Counsel Elite. Otherwise, on Instagram, it's Brandon Elliott Investments. Check us out on Facebook, too. You can always see me on Facebook.com/ Brandon Elliott Investor. And then if you have not already checked out CreditCounselElite.com, what are you waiting for? We're teaching business owners just like you how to get up to 500K at 0% interest in the next 30 to 90 days. You can do so every 6 months. So check that out. It's a quick 10, 15 minute video on there that explains more detail of what the heck I'm talking about and how you can access it sooner than later. And afterwards, you can jump on a free call with us to go over and get a second opinion. Otherwise, hit that subscribe button. You'll get the newest notification every single Monday. And leave that 5-star rating after listening to a few episodes. And we'll catch you on the next one. Till next time, guys. God bless. Omar, appreciate you, bro. Have fun today.
Hey, guys.
Stay blessed.
All right, you got it.
This has been another episode of Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast, brought to you by Brandon Elliott. For more information, please visit BrandonElliottInvestments.com. Also, please don't forget to like, share, and leave a comment below. Thanks again for joining. Until next time, God bless.